Good evening, friends. Let's unite in prayer. Almighty and eternal Father, again we meditate upon thy purposes and thy plans. As we seek the instruction of thy word and the guidance of thy spirit, feel assured that out of the areas of thy protection, there is nothing that the enemy may do against thy kingdom that you shall not make it known to thy household. If you do not reveal it to thy ministers and to thy people, we pray, our Father, that in the face of the warnings of thy word, of the developments which have taken place in counter-espionage, in the revealing of the knowledge of the plans of our enemies to thy people, we pray, our Father, that they shall in one voice demand that their leaders pay attention to these conditions. Grant unto us a realization, our Father, of our responsibility to each one bear witness to the truth, to bind the powers of darkness, to loose the forces of evil, to recognize all the phases of the power and the program of the enemies of thy kingdom to destroy this which you have ordained. Thankful that you have found faith in thy household to place them in the earth even at this time, and that we who are thy children can say, our Father which art in heaven, and know that you have timed our coming in and our participant in the events in the earth for this period, that our names have been written in thy Lamb's book of life from before the foundation of the world, and thou hast acknowledged that we are thy children. So as we say, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, we pray for the strengthening of our nation, from the liberation of our nation from false leadership, from the lifting up of thy standards, and for the dedication of thy people to carry out the prophetic objectives which of which they are assured of victory. So as we commit ourselves in thy hand, saying, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, grant unto each one of us an understanding of our day. That and we ask it. Amen. As American citizens, each one of us are, of course, interested in anything that affects the preservation of our civilization and our culture, affects the very life of our nation itself. Nor can we escape the impact of events that transpire around the world, because we are living within it. Because there is a vital interlinkage tonight of the affairs of all nations, because we have been foolish enough to permit ourselves to become entangled and entrapped in a world conspiracy to rule all of the earth. This program is not designed to share this administrative rule with the United States, but it was designed to influence and control these United States and to rule all of the world with an antichrist and evil influence. We point out tonight that we are in a double endangered entrapment, one of which is our membership inside the United Nations, and the other is in having leadership that is advised by those that are friendly to our enemies, and the strange and peculiar process by which we are negating our strength and our power, all of which fulfills the enemy's design and strategy. It is important for us to realize that diplomatic developments of the last few weeks have added to the administration's pressure of the development of good and better relations with the Soviet Union. Within such a strategy, they're taking a dim view of anybody presenting an anti-communist program or following through on anti-communism. They want a soft line now from America. They want Americans to start eliminating from their thinking anti-communism. And as such, the most deadly enemy to the strategy of peoples in high places, even in your nation, is what they call right-wingism. And I think you've been able to pick this up over radio and television and over the newspapers and through the airways as you have listened to the attack constantly upon everything that's referred to as the right wing, upon organizations and upon institutions that are opposed to communism. You say, what constitutes a right winger? Well, a right winger is one today who loves his nation, and if he's intelligent, he loves his faith, his religion, his God, and his race. A right winger is one who's determined that he wants to see the preservation of his race and of his nation, does not wish to see it absorbed, mongrelized, or taken over by the powers of evil. A right-winger is one that's opposed to communism. And let's make this clear. We are unalterably opposed to communism tonight, with no design nor desire to make peace with or accept an agreement with communism which we would not trust. Now, we're not speaking for Mr. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy seems to be enamored with the desire to make a peace with communism and trust the peace of the bear. Apparently, he does not remember Rudyard Kipling. Possibly, he didn't read any of Rudyard Kipling's writings during his youth, and they probably didn't tell him about it at all. But we have been long since warned by the astuteness of this writer not to trust the truth of the bear. Strangely, in this hour, we are watching a strategy that was for utter ignorance and perfidy has never been equaled in all history. First, we have often cited that if it would be very convenient if our enemy would write books and put a blueprint out concerning what he intended to do. The writings of Job said, "Oh, that my enemy would write a book." Well, this is one thing about the Soviet Union. They have accomplished just this for you. They wrote a book. The Soviet Union not only wrote a book, but they called this book Soviet Military Strategy. Now, I don't think you have much problem when your enemy writes a book and names his relationship to it. Soviet military strategy is what they are utilizing as a blueprint. They're teaching this in the military academies and in the naval and air academies of the Soviet Union. It is not only a part of their master analyzation of the world situation, the situations that affected World War I, World War II, and coming World War III. It's an evaluation of strength and of strategies as it relates to the entire Soviet world. It stretches from Asia to Africa. It takes in the concept of global war. It sees only one blueprint, the inevitable conquest of all the world by the Soviet socialistic republics of the world. It justifies its strategies which lead up to absolute annihilation upon the continued grounds, as it instructs its own military, of the perfidy and the treachery of imperialistic countries like the United States and Great Britain and Germany, who they charge tonight are conspiring to destroy the Soviet Union and are planning to base this operation upon the patterns of surprise attack. Having, therefore, unlimited resources in their hands, the Soviet Union claims, they therefore must gear all of their strategy to a realization that irrespective of what overtures or designs are intended by the Western world, that we are in a program and design to liquidate and exterminate them and wipe out completely their society. So therefore, on this premise, they excuse themselves for all the treachery which they then design and plan to use upon you. Now, I think this is rather significant that our enemy writes the book. The book has only been available rather lately, and this is the volume by Sokolovsky, Soviet Military Strategy. This particular copy has been first translated by Rand Corporation of Santa Monica and has been published under the direction and in its rearrangement with the United States government and the areas of military strategy. And this is a volume one on military strategy, becomes now a very important and vital textbook to the armed forces of the United States and to the areas of our foreign service and our military and foreign service experts. There is a dual volume that goes with this, and this is Soviet Psychological Warfare, which is by Marshall Bonded. Now, the importance of these volumes lies in the frankness with which they discuss these things. Of course, they didn't give a complimentary copy of this to the Pentagon. By some process of secret service, they were able to secure in the original Russian and in the text where they were being used a full copy of these documents and then translated them themselves. There was a pamphlet put out which is only a briefing of the areas that they wanted the world to understand, and it was called Soviet Military Strategy, the same author. This appeared about a year ago, but it did not contain this full content. It contained a declaration of Soviet strength. It contained a declaration of its military power, of its intent to protect itself all over the world. And so within this discussion of military strength and power, they warned that any aggressive act against the Soviet Union would be met with tremendous reaction, the retaliatory blows would be overwhelming and destructive, and so they warned the world of military strength and then predicated the attitude of their defense and their retaliation upon their nuclear strength, their great IBM missiles, and the new areas of strategic use of satellites. And this was available, and they permitted it to fall into the Allied hands of the West. But it was not long before the full text of the documents being used somehow passed into the hands of the West, and the whole document now comes out, and we find that the other pattern was only a limited one. This one is rather complete. This is a rather significant volume because it deals with the relationship of the entire socialistic areas of power involving its satellites, the Soviet Union proper, and all of that union as it extends to countries like Romania and areas they dominate in Hungary, or the vast areas they have taken over inside of Asia and the spreading empire of Red China. So this can only be supplemented by other volumes which are replete in information that prove the accuracy or inaccuracy of this volume. For instance, George Horvath's book, May I say song? Emperor of the Blue Ants is one of the most important texts now available on Red China and clearly delineates the areas of its power, the numbers of its manpower, the possibilities and the extensions of its war-making power, the ruthlessness and brutality that's involved in the soulless revolution and its ultimate gain, desires for gain throughout the world. So we'd be very foolish tonight if we were not realists, because we are watching a strange byplay, but one that you can understand tonight. There is nothing that is happening tonight between Soviet Russia and Red China that is not planned. There is nothing happening tonight between Russia and Red China that breaks up the general overall design for the conquest of the world by Soviet troops and the regroupings in the hours of strategy which it calls for. There is tonight a evidence of great and tremendous perfidy upon the part of those that are in responsible positions to lead our government. I do not trust tonight the Schleswingers or the Rustos. I don't trust the Foresters. I don't trust any of these who have in their hands responsibility for disarming these United States. I know of nothing that sounds more today like men in need of mental hospitals than people in an area of time when the struggle for the world is on are trying to disarm their own nation. Nor is there anything more foolish for a long and protracted program of military expenditures while at the other end of the production line they are working as fast as they can to destroy the things we are paying for. What could be more foolish than to pay billions for weapons for defense while spending millions of dollars to destroy the weapons we are making? If there's anything more fallacious than this, I would like to know what it is, unless it is the rest of the Kennedy foreign policy. Strangely, we are at this hour in an hour of unusual upheaval. We are being told of the immense risks. We have a great number of authors who are telling us how the devastation of the earth and nuclear warfare will be so terrific that no one would win such a war, that there would be no victory as it related to this, and therefore this great technological area of equality, if not superiority upon your part, is to be utterly wiped out because we would be better, they said, dread than dead. This seems to be a strategy that they are pushing at every opportunity. It's a rather significant thing that the psychological warfare with trained psychiatrists, Moscow trained and trained throughout various parts of Europe, are very, very important to Russian strategy. A great number of these people have come into these United States as trainees, and many of them have jobs as exchange professors in our universities and in our colleges. A great number of these that have been working with close affinity with the Soviet Union have been named and have thus been mentioned. I think it's a rather interesting thing, and I'm reading for the Nybrith Messenger of last Friday. It talks about that Israel is among the top 10 of the supplier of faculty members to United States colleges. Listen to this. Israel is among the top 10 of the suppliers of faculty members to United States colleges. Then it tells about how we have received into the United States 5,830 professors in the last year that have come from all over the world. A great number of them come from behind the Iron Curtain. And almost all of these men have moved out of an anti-Christian atmosphere. Now, significantly, the Nybrith Messenger boasts on how many of them are Zionists and Jews, and a great number of these do not just come out of Israel ally themselves, but come out of the Soviet Union and come out of areas of her influence. I think it's time that we revised our whole educational program and utterly repudiated as a people, as a race, and as a faith, the use of enemies of our faith and of our nation in our colleges to instruct our youth. Within the pattern of this, the Soviet psychological warfare has been geared to the fact that they have been working on this plan for 18 years, especially as it relates to these final phases of it, in the hands of trained psychiatrists. These psychiatrists, fully trained and fully understanding all the elements of psychological warfare, have become theological students, enrolled in our seminaries, now graduated, and in the pulpits of all the major denominations of the Christian faith. Now, don't go out of here and say, even if you're a left-wing reporter, that I said all Christian ministers were agents of the Soviet Union. That's about the way the left-wing press reports this. I said that there's an overwhelming number of communists in the pulpits of America at the present time. I also point out that this is a very cunning strategy, and I don't blame the devil for acting like one. The only challenge we make today is when intelligent Christians permit this thing to transpire in the name of Christianity, they should withdraw from these denominations, let them dry up on the bush, and support something that they can depend upon. So the Soviet Union has been developing and expanding its empire. It pays no respect to the principles of self-determination or the areas of racial identity or line. It is not determined, not disturbed in its operation as to how many people it eliminates, as long as it accomplishes its objective. We have watched the expansion of the Soviets since World War II, and we find tonight that communism has doubled the property and areas that it influenced at the end of World War II, and during World War II, they doubled the area they had before World War II. So tonight, Soviet Russia and its red satellites have four times as much territory as they had before World War II started. I also point out something that I think you should understand. The Soviet Union identifies itself with precipitating areas of World War II and creating the crises which started World War II. The Soviet Union has very, very carefully evaluated the economic and productive life of all of its allies. One of the most important subjects your enemy studies is still what's called geopolitics. They tried to rule that out because geopolitics is the way that the application of the term was applied in Germany. But the process of geopolitics, studying the earth, its raw materials, the relationship of people to its areas and to its terrain, and to their capacities of production, this is a very vital factor. In fact, today, every student should be trained today when he takes geography, and they ought to call it geography and not social studies. You know, you used to go to grammar school, and they gave you a big, thick geography book because it had maps in it. It told you all about the countries and the fact that the people even had a different color. It told you all about their background. It told you all about these people and what they did, what they produced, and so forth. Today, when you go down to see the substitute of this, you get a map, all right. You get social studies, but everybody's scattered everywhere, and they don't delineate today who lives where. Well, the fact today is within the same strategy, we see the development of a unique pattern. Because the Soviet Union has been developing and expanding its power, and it intends to do two things. First, it intends to gather all of Africa and all of Asia and utilize Africa and Asia in the accomplishment of the utter suppression of the nations of the white Western world. It was willing to utterly exterminate, if it has to, any area of opposition that could not be put down with military ease or internal revolution. So within military strategy, the psychological warfare is efficiently geared to their strategy, as is the development of missiles by captured German scientists or the development of areas of advanced aircraft. Also, it is wise for us in the West to always consider what the Soviet says and then just evaluate it in reverse, because that's what they're doing. For instance, the Soviet military came out to say that they no longer had any value placed upon the use of land-based aircraft or even naval-based aircraft. That aircraft were now obsolete and man-directed aircraft were of no value, and therefore only missiles now and rockets were significant. But all the while they're talking about this, the Soviet Union are making high-speed 2,000 and 3,000 mile-an-hour bombers as fast as they can assemble them while they tell you that they're no longer of any value. And if same time you in your country have postponed and held up the making of some of the largest bombers of high speed in your own country, the whole B-70 program has been sabotaged time after time by agents of the Soviet Union inside of your nation. And so you're in production at last. You may even make two or three a year from here on out, but your enemy already has a lead on you. I point these things out because they boast of the strategy by which they accomplish these objectives. I also point out to you that in this course of warfare, they had planted infiltration deep inside the church and deep inside the educational systems of America. And here they evaluated some points which I would bring out to your attention now before we go further, because we're going to deal with this thing. It's biblical, it's prophetic, it's historic, and we should understand where we are at this time. We're not a prophet of doomsday. We're not telling you about a great catastrophe that's going to wipe us off the earth. We're talking to you about a strategy of the enemy when our leadership is at its lowest ebb. We're talking about a great developing danger at the hands of our enemies when we are most naive as a nation. But I want you to know that God's going to electrify this nation. He's going to bring it out of its sleep. He's going to eliminate its bad leadership. And we are going to lead the nations of God's kingdom to an overwhelming victory against the very powers tonight that are arrayed against us. Soviet Russia, with its influence over the Polish government through a great number of the leaders, which were Polish Jews at the head of it, they were taking their orders from a Soviet bloc. helped to create the conditions that induced World War II. Without any approbation or criticism of any of the military areas of the war in its handling, without opposition or criticism or support, remaining utterly neutral on evaluation as far as Soviet Russia was concerned and Germany from the standpoint of World War II. I only now point out what they admit, that they had spurred a non-aggression pact between Molotov and von Ribbentrop on the basis that this would give a feeling of security to Germany in an area which they knew war would soon develop, having precipitated this by their influence over areas of the Polish government. Now, we are not anti-Polish, nor are we anti-German, nor are we anti-British, or just not against the people because they have a name or a type or a nation, but here are facts. That the irritation that the Soviet Union played heavily and anticipated would bring about a World War II, which they wanted just as completely as they are planning the strategy of your conquest, was the refusal to fulfill the Treaty of Versailles in granting the Free City of Danzig and the Polish Corridor an opportunity to vote as to whether they wanted to return to Germany or not, which was to be a climax of this situation under the Versailles Treaty. So the resulting irritation, refusal of Poland under Russian advice through their stooges that controlled areas of government to participate in this process but deny Germany, plus an assassin program that was carefully led by Red agitators to destroy and kill German personnel, and then when Germany demanded reparations or threatened they would make retaliation if it didn't come, they used their influence on Poland to send that historic telegram back to Germany that she wasn't going to do anything about it and said attack and be damned. Now that's a historic telegram that was sent to Germany. Now, out of this, of course, came the lightning war, the blitzkrieg, the fast-moving action of both ground forces with a coordinated air force that was greater and stronger than had been anticipated by Poland and nations on the perimeter of Germany. There were those that talked about the speed and development of this great air power. You remember that Colonel Charles Lindbergh came back and reported to his own nation that Germany was very strong and ready, and if the war came, why, she would land terrific blows. At the same time, it is not a pro or con evaluation. It was the evaluation of a great American making a military fact aware to his country that he thought was for its good. But because this man was a German, because they had awarded this man awards for his heroism, his brilliance, and his foresight, he was to be condemned and persecuted in his own country by organized Jewry. I point out that the war, as it started, had been anticipated by the Russians to be a much shorter war than this. But they had designed areas in which they had hoped to bring America into its participation. They hoped to involve so long a battle between Russia, or rather between Germany, the United States, Britain, and France, that Western Europe and the areas of support to Western Christian civilization would be exhausted, and then at their weakened and exhausted state, the Soviet Union planned on coming in with a coup de grace if they were able to get out from us sufficient weapons to do it with. I think it a rather significant thing, and I bring this out as the evaluation requires it. Before the ink was dry on that non-aggression pact, Russia violated it by invading Little Finland, which was a European country. And simultaneously, she had invaded previously Poland during the height of the German-Polish War, and there had been no design that Russia should enter in. It had been refused, and the contract of this non-aggression pact said that Russia would have to stay out of Europe. She violated the contract. She entered into the situation and was actually responsible, as time has shown, for that deadly Katyn massacre, for which, without any attempt to spare them, the war crime trial judges sentenced the German officers for something they had no part nor lot in. And when Secret Service discovered this before the execution of these German officers, Mr. Eisenhower did nothing to intervene and let these German officers be killed for a Russian crime, rather than disturb the good relations between America and the Soviet Union. I ask you tonight, who gains by good relations between Russia and the United States? Only Russia. I point out to you that Russia has nothing we need, and she has everything that is dangerous to us, basically a driving desire to destroy our way of life and subordinate us by a mass pattern of complete power. I point out to you that Russia evaluates the fact that the speed of communism and the affinity of communism to the non-Christian countries makes its ideology more acceptable to all Asiatics and Negro countries. It cites that in these areas, their
their religion is not a vital part in opposition to their political reactions. But they said that in white nations or in Christian nations, our Christian faith is a basic dynamic whose principles support capitalism and stand as a barrier against the movement of Soviet doctrines. Well, I'm glad to find out that somebody realizes that the Christian church is good for something. It is a realization that the Christian church is a barrier against the strategy of Antichrist, that the Soviet Union, therefore, has lent a skill infiltration of their own cunningly trained students, astute at professing conversions and acceptance of the faith, to get in and contaminate it by trying to utilize it as influence to accomplish Soviet objectives. At the psychiatric conference held in Bucharest a year ago, and we reported to you from this pulpit the material that leaked out and became available to the Western world, they boasted on their success of influence in the editorial staffs of Christian churches and in areas of education among women's clubs. And you know what the major program was? Ban the bomb! End nuclear warfare! Mass peace programs, mass pacifism. And then they started to interpret to Christians how Jesus wanted peace, wanted them to turn the other cheek. Let me tell you something. When you turn your other cheek to a nuclear punch in the jaw, you don't have any head. And if you think tonight that Jesus Christ ever advocated anything like that, I'm going to tell you you're wrong. Because when Christ gets into this peace pit, he comes in leading the armies of heaven, and he swings a blow at your enemies that causes their blood to flow to the horse's bit. That's the kind of peace that Christ offers the enemy. The peace that passes all understanding is in the souls of men when they're on the right side. It's not God making peace with evil like the Kennedys are trying. I point out something else to you. When the world knows peace for an unlimited period of time that stretches out over the millennium and the years to come, that peace comes from having achieved victory over evil. The defeat of the powers of darkness and the smashing defeat of world communism. The Bible is quite implicit upon this, as we shall show you very quickly. It tells you the nations that are involved. It tells you the mighty judgments at this end. It tells you the victory. But it warns you of this area through which you are passing. So ban the bomb, peace at any price, nuclear destruction and fear complexes are sold to us by churches, by schools, by left-wing professors. I'm rather interested in these 5,000, some 800 professors that come from outside the United States, from non-Christian nations, not associated with our thinking, to teach in our colleges and schools. I'd just like to know who's hiring these fellows. Now, if you call this exchange culture, let's keep ours at home then. This is a bad phrase. You ship them something good, and you get back a revolution and a stab in the back. I point out to you something significant now within the strategy of the enemy. They cited that, therefore, they are convinced that the actual industrialists, the American imperialists, the bourgeoisie, the smug American that goes out and makes himself wealth. You know, that's the most terrible thing you can do, is go out and accumulate security. Well, you see, that's so foreign from the communist world that just puts you out of bounds and you must be destroyed if you've had a little creative vision and a little energy or a little thrift. Anyhow, you don't have a right to own anything in the Soviet world, and the idea that so many Americans can own something just seems to drive these communists into fury. So therefore, there must be no attempt to permit your society to survive, because all of you are designing on blowing the Soviet Union off the face of the earth with quickness and with treachery. Well, it doesn't look like it. Mr. Kennedy's trying to give them everything we've got. I received by messenger this morning from a closed conference that was held in Washington, D.C. By one of the senators of the United States, Senator Strom Thurmond, a message this morning. He said, as fast as you can, get this out to as many people as you can reach. I positively have the facts and the evidence that the Kennedy administration is willing not only to surrender everything we have in the area of defense, it is willing to capitulate and make any deal necessary to forestall a nuclear war and to assure the world that there will be no further use of nuclear weapons in any war and that there will be no further testing. In this strategy, and in order to get this promise from the Soviet Union, the Kennedy administration, its branches, staffs, and assistants are willing to make any deal, and they are now offering every area of possible defense that is left unto it. And so Strom Thurmond said, get this out to as many people as possible, but unless the Senate reverses this situation, unless we can wake America up now, we're going to be the victims of an invasion and of a defeat, and we are going to pass under the control of a Soviet world to an unknown dark tomorrow. I can just add something to what Strom Thurmond said. Unless, my friends, the Senate saves us, the people are going to have to save themselves. And in the midst of this resistance to the darkness and this saving ourselves, you're going to see the strongest, mightiest, most powerful air units you've ever seen come in on your behalf. Now, let me tell you this. The United States of America, under its present leadership, is not planning on destroying the Soviet Union with a surprise attack. In the first place, I don't believe that the war is coming. I believe the war is already on. We have been engaged in fighting Soviet Russia ever since the end of World War II. We have been fighting them in the areas of Korea. We've been fighting them in the jungles of Asia. And the white man from Dien Bien and the French debacle as they lost that area, all over the areas of China, the withdrawal of the Kai-shek forces, the battles of Formosa, all of these areas from Greece to other parts of the world is a battle and a warfare against communists, Moscow-directed and Moscow-oriented. And I point out to you that you still have somewhere about 1,000 Americans that have been held captive inside of Red Chinese camps that you've never had given back to you, and you haven't had enough statesmanship in America to get them back or to make it very clear to the Soviet Union that these Americans must be released or returned, or we'll blow Beijing off the face of the earth. You say, do you believe that we should attack the Soviet Union? We should have attacked it yesterday. I don't evaluate all of Moscow, all of Stalingrad, all of the areas of the Soviet Union worth one American life. Now I point out first that I think and how I think about my enemy is largely what my enemy has formulated by his own words. And so in this instance, the major strategy was to create this impression of the necessity of the abandonment of the one thing they realized we needed most. Soviet Russia says with Red China, we had the areas of influence in Africa, but with Red China and Red satellite nations, the Soviet Union has at the present time almost one half of the world's manpower inside of communist ranks. That the Red Chinese are capable of supplying Soviet Russia tonight with 30 million men under arms right now. Now let's point this out to you. That a war that lasted into a few years, a war of attrition, on the strength of manpower, would be won by the Soviet Union by all natural mathematical evaluations. Now, I'm not talking about what one man can do with God. If we just had one Samson and one David, we could probably whip the Soviet Union. But it wouldn't be David Eisenhower. Thank God we didn't have two of them or we'd have lost. Under the instance of these situations and under this pattern of crises, the Soviet Union therefore said that at the present time, the white nations of the Western world, so they evaluate you Christian nations as the white nations of the Western world, they say you're only 1/7 tonight of the earth. Now, we previously had said we were 1/6, and we were. But we just have probably overlooked the fact of how fast the enemy's breeding up in Africa and all over. Now, under this strategy, they said you're only 1/7 of the world's power. And basically, they count on all of the other 6/7 being in their orbit before they get through the next 12 months. They compute that it would be impossible for you on a manpower basis to fight a normal war with rifles and with bayonets and with standard weapons, even light tank and mobile units. It would be impossible for you to win against this mass of manpower, this encircling power, this pouring of people like ants, constantly and continually until every area of the Western white Christian world had been conquered. But they have something else in mind. They say that America can only hold out in the world because of their technological know-how. The use of technological weapons, the ability to manufacture them, and the strange affinity, they said, that America has to just producing all she wants of everything with such great speed, means that tonight, that though you and all the nations that are Christian are only 1/7 of the world's power, that you are as strong as they, maybe stronger, on the basis of all the technological weapons. They say America has 40,000 nuclear warheads completely capable of devastating any part of the earth she wants tonight. All right, we've had 40,000, all right, but I don't know, since Mr. Kennedy's been in there, whether they got any heads for these 40,000 missiles anymore. I don't know how many each week they've been taken off for the Soviet Union. Anyhow, the fact remains that they said, here we are faced with this fact. that if we are to win a war, let's evaluate the last one. So in this evaluation, they tell about the productive strength of nations. In fact, the British Empire in the last war finally got up to being able to release or to harness 40% of its productive level to the war industry. Couldn't put out any more of that, and women survived because of its output. So when 20% of the output of the Soviet Union went into war missiles and supplies and the material of war, it had reached the ability of the British Empire to produce military equipment under its economic and world situation. The Germans, though they had a lightning war in ability by equipment they had prepared, were using about 12% of their productive strength when the war began. At the end of the war, when they were fighting most of the world, they had over 50% of their total production diverted to it. But this was making a terrific toll upon their economy and making a terrific toll upon their ability to supply sufficient food to their peoples. So, as it relates to all the rest of the countries, France hardly even counts here. It never got above 6% and 8% and counted on that long Maginot line and those rabbit warrens to protect them, and it didn't, because it didn't even fight them. So it said, what lost France the war? I'll tell you, they've been swimming in wine so long and drinking so much of it that their alcohol-bemused minds had robbed the stamina out of the French to defend themselves. And they had a few men like Pétain, a few others, but they couldn't fight it alone. And when they tried to spare their country, they were charged with being in cooperation with the enemy. I point out to you that they come to the United States. The United States produced 83% of everything that was used by the Allies in World War II, including much of the weapons of the Soviet Union. You know, the Soviet Union was talking big. It had manpower, lots of blades and small arms. But you know, they almost were licked by Little Finland. When they attacked Little Finland with only a handful of planes, the Finnish Air Force and the Finnish ATAK fire, supplied by guns given to them by Germans, knocked aircraft after aircraft out of the Finnish skies. When suddenly Finland was attacked by the communist red beast, why, the sky was filled over Helsinki with red aircraft. It looked as though the very sun was being darkened. I have a documentary film that we can show here some night that I have owned since that period of time, a documentary film of the attack on Finland that shows wave after wave of Soviet aircraft coming in and attacking what they thought was a defenseless city. A country that had paid its war debt, that had honored all of its responsibilities, and who President Roosevelt had promised on the night of that Soviet attack that the leopard cannot change its spots, the hideous red leopard strike. He said, we'll help little Finland, we're the most honorable among nations. And then the Jews said, you can't. Mr. Morgenthau wouldn't let him, and he never did. And then we sent home their ambassadors and their foreign service when Germany made a pact with them and supplied them with equipment, because since Russia was now entering Europe, Germany saw that it was vital and necessary that everywhere she could stop Russia, she should do this. And so she gave Finland aircraft, she gave Finland anti-aircraft and equipment, and she supplied them with small arms. And under the leadership of a great and brilliant man of your race, Count Mannerheim, who said, men of Issachar, nothing but scorched earth cursed by God will fall into Russian hands. I tell you tonight that little Issachar is one of the house of Israel, the true right way seat, and like Zebulun, patrons of prophecy, Zebulun, Judah, and Issachar were to be on the east, and that's where they were encamped. The Germanic peoples are the Israel of the scripture, and historically their pattern, as it involves the program of God's kingdom, is linked irretrievably with yours. The Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic people better wake up. They constitute God's house, his family, his race on the earth. And if the white man does not stand together, why, he would be wiped out and destroyed. But God's got a plan to stir every white man up, and he's going to be stirred up. And if we don't look out, these Mau Maus in America are going to finish it for you. There's nothing that is awakening the white man to racial consciousness quite like this integration row and all this red-sponsored trouble, because they boast that it's their strategy. I might bring out something at this point. I have in my hands a rather interesting piece out of the Nybrith Messenger for this week. And what makes this so important is that here in this meeting, which involves Martin Luther King and the New York Zionist Order in the United States and the largest of the Jewish organizations, they said here at this meeting that they had produced and supplied more finance and more assistance from coast to coast to the Negroes, because they didn't want to see them persecuted like they had been. So the Jews said that they had supplied the Negroes with all this integration problem, propaganda, leadership, finance, and attorneys. And so the Far Band action was hailed by Martin Luther King, president of the Southern Christian Leadership Council, as with deep appreciation. And Dr. King told the Far Band that without its moral support and its assistance, the Negroes would have been defeated, caught in the dungeon of despair. After what we told you last week from Dow Jones's newspaper, The National Reporter, this whole left-wing Negro trouble is a part of a world communist Jewish conspiracy to create trouble and to take your eyes off of the world situation at a time when you should have your eyes on it. After all, one senator had a rather strange answer last week. He's a liberal, too, but he came from the South, and he's just so tired of hearing about Negro trouble in the United States. He said, well, we can settle that. We can just all be niggas. If we're all niggas, he said, then we won't be any more trouble. He says that when you get on a bus, the bus driver just says, you black niggas go to the black, you white niggas stay to the front, but the trouble's all over. Never have we had a time, however, when it stirs white men up. Now, this senator is a real left-winger, too, you see, but when you get down on the color of his skin and his granddaughter and what he hopes will be his great-granddaughters, then something changes. Listen. In this massive pattern of strategy, the Soviet Union then clearly outlined the evaluation that America produced 83% of all of the goods of a long war of attrition. They stood back and expected that Germany, exhausted, smashed, and broken, would crumble and be forgotten, and that the Morgenthau plan to make it nothing but a pastoral community, while their goods and their factories were shipped to Germany, their males emasculated, and their community left with nothing but a Mongol replacement. They thought genocide was their solution. It didn't work. They were amazed. One of the things they can't interpret is that resiliency with which West Germany came back tonight to a war production greater than when World War II started. And America, who should be exhausted economically and financially, having carried the weight of the war upon its shoulders, and tonight America is still the strongest, most powerful, industrially creative nation on the face of the earth. And so your enemy says that America, which produced 83% of all the war goods right now, could suddenly harness her entire economy to a 70% production and still not miss any of the essentials of life, and would, in the shortness of a few months, get back up to a full-time 83 to 85% and is the only nation that could keep the nations of the Western world fighting a war of attrition against the Soviet Union. Now, I think this makes something quite obvious, but they don't leave this for you to figure out. You can just read the whole book. They said, now, let's be frank. They said, we would win a war of attrition if it was just manpower. But if it's going to be carried on with the continued production, development of technology and of weapons, it could be devastating and destructive to the Soviet Union. We have no design to let this thing happen. We would like to take over all the world with fifth column revolution on the inside, capitulation of its peoples, and we never cease. They have been playing hard to get by strategy while we've offered more and more. You would be astonished tonight if you knew what the perfidy of administration had done in offering to the Soviet Union areas of disarmament. And of course, when you have a man who can't tell the difference between a lie and the truth, someone says you shouldn't call the president a liar. Well, then just let him say he hasn't any moral perception of what a lie is, because he told us that the Soviet withdrew its troops and withdrew its missiles, and they did not only didn't do this, but they increased them. He told us he didn't make a deal with Khrushchev, and he's a liar. Maybe he doesn't know it, but he is, because he did. He pulled the weapons out of Turkey, and he pulled down all the missiles we had set up in Europe that were zeroed in on the Soviet Union, because Mr. Khrushchev said, this is the deal. I'll take the pressure off of you for what you've just done down there in Mississippi if you'll turn around now and take down the missiles. Because that whole fiasco was just to take the pressure off the administration for invading our own states. When it comes to courage, intelligence, and leadership, the only area where the administration has showed any courage is the attacking of one of our own states. Couldn't touch Castro, but you could invade Mississippi. Wouldn't want to take on any area of real challenge, but you can give away a part of Texas. You know, I hope Texas wakes up in the next few days. Because the President of the United States lied again. We told you a year ago he went down there and promised Mexico that chunk of El Paso. Someone said, well, it's an old agreement. The agreement's 100 years old, over that, and we fought with Mexico since then. More than that, we said we'd follow the river. And if God changes the river by an act of God, then, my friends, we got the country when there was nothing on it. We built it up. We put houses, buildings, factories, stockyards, mighty buildings. We spent billions on it. And now the red world has a strategy. The red world is behind the Mexican demand for the return of this area of El Paso. You say, what is that strategy? Well, under the World Court, where Mexico was pushed to take the case, the decisions of the court is that we should give it to Mexico, even though it belongs to the United States. Now, you see, Russians wanted to get Alaska back, and they wanted to make a big noise out of so-called Seward's folly of the purchase of Alaska. Remember how everybody thought it was foolish to buy Alaska when Alaska was bought? History tells you it was the best buy we ever made. And now the Soviet Union says the Tsar had no right to sell it. But the Tsar was the power in those days, and he did have the right to sell it. And the most important thing is we got it. Now, the World Court, if given the opportunity, would give that back to Alaska, because there's only two of your friends on the World Court, if you can call them friends. The Conwy Reservation has protected you from this conspiracy. Now we point out that as long as this was a territory, as long as the Soviet... As Alaska was a territory, they might have dealt part of it away. But the moment we made a state out of Alaska, you can't give away a state or a territory, or a part of a state. You can a territory, you can deal with a territory, but not with a state. Now, if we give away a part of Texas, we set up a president, and they can reopen this discourse and demand any part of Alaska, which would probably be about four-fifths of it. I only mention this because it shows the perfidy and the strangeness of these situations. It proves to you can never trust a Kennedy who said, I didn't do it, and he did do it. And it all comes out that he made the promise when he was down in Mexico on that Mexican hop about 7 or 8 months ago. We also point out to you, and I hope every Texan remembers, and I hope its legislature remembers, because the legislature is supposed to have to ratify this, that Texas was a sovereign nation, that Texas became a member of the United States by a treaty, and reserved the right to withdraw at any time. And the state of Texas would have to ratify giving this country, this piece of Texas, back to Mexico. And I'm going to assure you tonight that I don't think that the legislature of Texas can approve this and ever go back to office. In fact, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston newspapers, and a lot of others are talking about the fact maybe we ought to secede for a little while, because it would be to the benefit of Texas. It would cost us less than what we're taking out of us for taxes. Let's just keep Texas. All right. Of course, we realize this is all within the area of political jockey. But I just point out to you today that the Reds can steer or slice off of Texas by their ingenuity. And if Mr. Kennedy doesn't know this, then he's not smart enough to be president of the United States or a dog catcher in a good-sized town. Someone said to me, what do you think would happen if they made a dog catcher out of him? We'd just go up and gather up all the dachshunds and let the wolfhounds run. Among the patron of this measure, then, Soviet Russia says, it is important that we keep our enemies guessing at all times. It is also important that when the time is ripe, that we will stir racial crisis and upheaval in the nations that are our enemies while approaching them as friends. We shall create division in the Soviet Union verbally, and even make harassing and apparently brutal statements against our allies. And when our enemies are assured that communism is fighting among themselves, it is far easier for them to accept us as a part of a European community while we continue to heckle the Soviet allies. Then when we have entered into disarmament pacts, and when we've entered into a program of peace and ban weapons, and the Western world and the United States has destroyed its weapons and destroyed its warheads, and when they have made a pact that will never permit them to be used against us and we against them, sick, they say, then suddenly they're going to discover something. Yes, Red China has the bomb. They've got a lot of them. We've given to them. Not us, but the Soviet Union has put a stockpile of nuclear weapons and missiles in China. China is not affected by agreements. A nuclear bomb in a few days is going to be broken in China, and this is already being downgraded by those that want to brainwash you to say, well, there's so many years behind us that we don't have to worry about them catching up. They don't have to catch up. They already have a stockpile to use against you. The Soviet Union feels that if Red China attacks you by missiles, and don't you get any idea that she doesn't want to. If you just read Mao Tse-sung and his story of his empire and his blue ants, you'll discover there's one thing. On all of the posters in China, on all the areas of communication, in every party magazine, newspaper, they are telling the peoples of Red China that their great contribution is going to be the conquest of North America and the crushing of the United States is the only obstacle for a Soviet world. They're telling Red China that North America shall be an area of Chinese occupation to help alleviate the areas of population explosion, and that they will be able to carry home, divide up, and take all of the trinkets and possessions that you have in your homes and all the things you have. And I have looked at a picture taken with a small camera by a merchant that was in Singapore and came back from Red Chinese areas, of Red Chinese with lots of white women being brought home with strings around their back, around their necks, and here goes the Chinaman carrying them all home on a rope. And this is put up in all of the areas of these work camps and among the military as the spoil they can have. White women by the drove brought back as their captives. So they incite the patterns of lust, they incite the patterns of greed, of the age-old invasion, confiscatory policy, and dividing up the goods of your nation. So this is a red design. Russia knows that Red China wants to invade, knows that she can give a very little assistance, and this will start. The Red China wanted a Carter to cross Bering Straits to attack Alaska across the ice in the wintertime. We know that it is an anticipated pattern on the part of your military that Red Communists will cross the frozen ice of Bering Strait to attack Alaska. I know men in the military that have been assigned to Alaska. I know young men that went up to Alaska and were glad to get back home because they were told you're expendable. At any night, the warning may come, and 20 warnings during their stay came. And they always came at night. And when these warnings came, they knew that something was happening on the red side of Bering Strait, or troops were moving out on the ice. This meant that in the midst of darkness, they might be attacked. And the major objective was to bring home from Alaska the American citizens, or to get them out, and these soldiers were expendable. They could surrender, they could fight, they could disappear into the white wilderness, but this was the pattern. Russia says that she has a corridor through which Red China could march, but she has to protect herself against some of the maybe taking ways of the Red Chinese when they went through. So this is all, of course, within the traffic of her own strategy. Now, the Russian design calls for a precipitated war against you by red satellites like China, while she in turn is neutral and allied with a non-aggression pact, with a peace pact with you. Then when you retaliate with those bombs that are always in the air, when you retaliate, I'd just like to see whether those bombs up there work. I trust the Air Force, but I don't trust these people that have been finagling with the bombs. I trust America, and I trust its military, but I don't trust any foolish administration that would destroy one-third of our dew line, cut down our defenses to stop a surprise attack by 30% in a deal with the enemy. And last week, the administration eliminated 30% by deal with the dew line. That's treason. Now, let me point this out to you tonight, that Russia's strategy is near called for. Since, therefore, America produced 83% of all the war goods and is the only country that could keep a long war going, America must be utterly destroyed. She says we'd like to take it, but it's more important that we destroy all the great manufacturing cities. It's more important that we destroy the great ports of its shipping. It's more important that we utterly negate by destroying with high thermonuclear explosions a 30-mile perimeter around all the areas of manufacture, all the great cities, so that the creators, the inventors, the artisans, the employees, and the technicians will go. That every major port city of the West Coast, the East Coast, and all the major cities in the United States industrial-wise must go just like that. Must go with surprise. After America has dropped its first attack on China. They said China won't be hurt too badly because they have so many people and they're scattered out over such a big area. We've already diversified the weapons of China over such a wide area that you couldn't destroy its war power, and you'd only hit a few of them. And after we'd shot one or two of our great retaliatory loads, the Soviet Russia could hit us with almost immunity. Nice fellows, these friends. Oh, my, how it thrilled Mr. Harriman, and how it was reported back to the president when he arrived. Mr. Khrushchev smiled. Isn't that amazing? He smiled. Reassurance to the Western world. The devil smiled. You say, well, he's just a boy at heart. Yeah, remember what kind of a boy he was? When he was just a young man, he came home drenched with Christian blood one day to tell his Jewish parents that he joined with other Jewish youths in killing Christians. Nice boy at heart. A man is no better. He's cunning. He's evil. Don't worry about somebody replacing him that's more evil, because they don't come in those grades. I tell you that a smiling devil is more dangerous to the Anglo-Saxon Nordic front than a cold-faced one. But just look at those little pig-like eyes when he gets angry. Listen. So the design is racial crisis, America troubled, America being told that if we don't sue for peace, the world's going to get scorched. The administration running over and joining the truce of the bear, and now making a design to surrender our defenses and at best turn it over to the Soviet Union, which is, or to the United Nations, which is Soviet dominated. Now, the moment that our potential has been destroyed, they will not worry much about America because it couldn't carry on an effective war after this attack, they cite. That isolated areas could be mopped up later by the mass manpower at their disposal. But they believe then that Britain and the rest of the world will collapse. That Germany is now up to 30% of its economy and the kind of production that would be translated to war economy. She'd get up to 50% easier now than ever before, but she would have to destroy Germany possibly, but with America out of the way, they might bring about a capitulation. They also boast about their strategy in making all the East Germans happy with them. They let them have their commanders. They let them have their snappy uniforms. The East German marches with a goose step. He marches with the efficiency, and he operates and drills with all of the military efficiency for which his race is known. Now, they said we can count on the fact that the finest, best-equipped, most mobile fighting machine in Europe is East Germany. And this will overthrow West Germany because East Germany is better prepared at this time. Now, I'm going to tell you something. They have put in every German regiment spies. Suppose I told you tonight that for a long way back, every German military man that they have used, and in all the problems of their code, know how to communicate with one another. More than that, they know how to identify every true German, and there's not a spy in the East German army that the East German army don't know about tonight. And I'm going to tell you something else they're counting on that they don't understand. And that is that one of these nights, that in the proper timing, when they think they can count on it, the East German Army and the West German Army are going to join together and every Soviet agent will be dead. So how do you know? It doesn't say anything in my Bible about dividing the real house of Judah. It tells about their coming up with strength. One great and mighty stick, standing with all of the Anglo-Saxon house of Joseph, the whole Nordic household of God, standing as one mighty army against the enemy. Now let me point out that they then plan the envelopment of the earth with their Asiatic Negro hordes and the enslavement of all Christian civilization, the elimination of every last vestige of religion of the Christian faith, which stands as the basic obstacle to the acceptance by the world of communist strategy. You see, the Buddhists capitulated. The Buddhists told their people to accept communism. Remember that this was also true among almost every pagan priesthood. Remember tonight that Africa is fast going communist. Remember that Ghana, in which you've spent close to 37 millions, has just become a part of the socialistic republics of the world. Now let us turn for one moment to the scriptures. United States of America, the great land of the outstretched wings of the eagle, is portrayed in the 12th chapter of the book of Revelations as being the leader of opposition against the powers of evil, the forces of Lucifer. And you're told that Lucifer, defeated by Michael, cast out of heavens to earth with his unassimilatable offspring, his satanic power, ruled over the dragon kingdoms. And for ancient patterns, the dragon, the serpent kingdoms became marked with areas that Lucifer ruled over. And it tells that he is continually planning and designing to make war with your race, but his great final design is to gather all of the serpent dragon peoples, all Africa and Asia, and to attack the white race, to go and make war with your race, it tells you in Revelations. The race of which the Christ came, the race out of which the civilization of the Adamic race is carried. But to this woman has been given a great nation. To this great civilization of the white race has been given the outstretched wings of the American eagle. Let me warn you tonight that if there's anything that the eagle has a capacity to do, it's to fight serpents and snakes. The eagle is the snake killer. And Jesus identifies these serpents walking around and said, "Ye are the generation of the viper. Ye are the children of the serpent." I want you to know tonight that we will never know peace until we've eliminated the serpents and the vipers. This is eagle's work. It wasn't intended, my friends, for the weak and the fearful. Let me point out to you that there will come against you all the hordes of the dragon. It says the dragon will cast out of his mouth water as a flood and seek to swallow you up in the flood. If you go back to the book of Isaiah, you'll discover what this means when it says that he would cast out water as a flood. It tells us in that day, it says, "Woe unto the multitudes of these many peoples, which make a noise like the noise of the seas, like the rushing of nations. And they mark themselves as the rushing forces of like mighty waters. These nations rush against you." It sounds like Russia, doesn't it? It says, "But God will rebuke them. They shall come from afar off. They shall move against you, and they shall be chased like the chaff upon the mountains, like the tumbleweed rolling before the whirlwind. Behold, at eventide they come." This means in the fall and winter. "At eventide they come, but by the spring they shall not be. Their portion of them that come to spoil us and the portion of they that come to rob us will be defeat, extinction, extermination." Now you say, how do you know? Because God hath declared this. In another passage we read these words, in which God refers to the Assyrian and says, "Behold, the Assyrian comes like mighty waters, rushing like a great stream, like water out of the dragon's mouth." Let me show you something here. The forces of darkness, the powers of evil, the whole world communist force, now under a satanic design, seeks to swallow up your civilization, especially this great nation of the outstretched wings of the eagle. And the very earth is going to help you. The very forces of nature are going to be on your side. Say, what's the solution to this? My friends, it's not pacifism, it's victory. And this flood shall be swallowed up by the very earth itself. Let's turn to the 38th chapter of the book of Ezekiel. 38th chapter of the book of Ezekiel doesn't tell us that we're going to lose. It says, the word of the Lord said, "Son of man, set thy face against the prince of the land of Russia and the chief princes of Moscow and Tobolsk. Prophesy against them." And then it tells about how they're going to come against your race, against your great civilization, against your land of unwalled villages with their missiles in the sky, rising and soaring like flying swords in the book of Esdras. And then comes the hand of God. Superior technological ability is going to intercept and destroy. Great mythical powers come to your assistance, and you as a mighty army stand up. And as these armies come against the lands and the nations of your race, it says you're going to crush and break them in the mountains of Israel. When you get through with it, it's going to take earth movers, like Turnipool's earth movers and the bulldozers of your nation, 7 months to just bury the dead of their first wave of attack. Now don't sit back and think it's going to be done by surrender, by acquiescence. It says the wrath is going to rise up in your countenance as you find out what's being done to you. And woe unto these people that have betrayed us. There's not going to be a Canaanite in the house of God. War on the outside, war on the inside. Not doomsday, deliverance. We haven't time to read to you the whole content of the book of Ezekiel. But the book of Ezekiel, as it relates to this measure, tells you that these hordes come out of Asia. They come out of Africa, and they come led by the Russians. And their cunning guidance is Satan's own family, his own household, who you know everywhere where you see them. Someone said on a radio broadcast the other night, they were interrogating somebody. He just made a trip down among the Arabs and among the peoples of Israel. They said to him, "Did you see any anti-Semitism down there?" He said, "I saw a lot of it." Well, they said, "Isn't that terrible?" He said, "Well, it doesn't make for peace." He says, what is anti-Semitism? Well, he says it was the Arabs fighting against the Jews, the Jews against the Arabs, because they both claim to be Semites. The other day, Mr. Kennedy promised the Zionists that we'd fight for them, we'd defend them, we'd protect them, we'd preserve them. And I think that every Christian should refuse to serve militarily to defend Israel ally as a conscientious objector. Not a conscientious objector against defending his country or against fighting communism, but against defending the people that have created and spread communism and are responsible for their own Arab troubles. I would follow the Kermit Roosevelt line and I'd lend lease the Arabs. I think that we'd have a better behaved Israel ally if we lent lease the Arabs. After all, every one of these Israel allies here and there want to change the color of your great-grandchildren. Just remember that. All right, so here's the blueprint. Russia says we are going to then join ranks again. No break in the Soviet Union. A great triumphant victory. What about Mao Tse-tung? Mao Tse-tung has one desire. He said, if there is any one desire that he has in his heart, it is the utter crushing liquidation of white nations. White devils must die before the liberating armies of the Red Chinese People's Republic. The most hateful of all of the white nations is imperialistic America. The United States has been carrying war on against us from the earliest hours of our fight for freedom from despotic rulers. Only the crushing defeat of the United States and the occupation of their lands by Red Chinese will be acceptable to the Chinese people. Don't be under any illusions. They're not going to have a friendly little conference with you and a little tea party picnic and then everybody's going to settle down. Red China tonight with nuclear weapons is as happy as a bee with two stingers. If you think there's any reticence about these people, they don't even have any emotion about it. They just look forward to this. Someone said, well, what's going to happen? I'm going to tell you one thing that's going to happen. About the time that they start pouring 30 million Red Chinese across Bering Strait, even if the ice is 18 to 20 foot thick. A few nuclear bombs over that ice is going to make the greatest holocaust of reflective death and devoured peoples that have ever attacked anybody in history. Somebody says, yes, but it'll all freeze over again the next day. But it won't be the same bunch on the ice. Russia says we wouldn't dare do that because the radiation off the ice would kill everybody in Alaska and we couldn't afford to do that. Well, let me tell you, my friends, that in these hours which are ahead, there are a lot of trying developments. But the gospel has unveiled that these areas of your opposition will be turned to powder and dust. You don't have to make a deal with the enemy. If there's any arrangement to make, you better tell him to drop to his knees while he's still got time. You don't have to lead out of weakness. Your strength doesn't lie in your numbers. You're the minority in the earth. Your strength lies in your Father and who you are and the great wisdom that God pours out on a people that serve Him in righteousness and in truth. We don't want to destroy the world. We want to bring the world into its greatest area of understanding, knowledge, peace, and wisdom that it has ever known. We want to see it able to produce all the things that it needs for itself. We want to see them harness their energies to constructive programs. We don't want to see them under slavery and under the yoke of the powers of Antichrist, nor under the tyrants of their own leaders. Let me tell you tonight that the Negro society better wake up. The most evil thing that could happen to Negroes in the United States would be to rule over by Negroes. There is no demagogue more cruel, no tyrant more rapacious than a Negro ruling Negroes. What would a red Negro leader be like? I think you don't have to go far. Go down and ask Ghana citizens. In one disagreement in the Parliament of Ghana a few months ago, 23 Ghanese chieftains were killed by the order of Mr. Nkrumah. That's democracy in Ghana.
Someone said, is Christianity motivated by hatred? No, it's motivated by a great destiny. A destiny to survive, to grow, to lift the standards of righteousness and rule the earth with righteousness for God. This is your destiny. And I point out to you tonight that we have offered to the world assistance, guidance, and bound up its wounds, fed its injured, rushed to the aid in the time of earthquake, famine, and storm. But you are not today buying friendship. You today find that the powers of darkness are gathering all the non-white world to be your enemy. God said, listen, my children, you ask me, and I'm going to give you the heathen for thy inheritance, the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. I just want to warn some of the silly Christians around the country, we're not about to evacuate. We're not planning to run out of the world and turn it over to the devil. That's not God's program. We're going to stay here. We're going to meet his offensive. We're going to conquer the enemy, and we're going to rule the earth forever and ever and ever. We're not going anywhere. Frankly, if all the people that want to go somewhere would leave now, they'd clear the decks for action, and we could get on with this a lot faster. I think every intelligent American can recognize that if you're anti-communist, you're right-wing. If you're right-wing, according to the majority of the voices speaking out in the areas of Republican Party leadership, you should be purged. If you're a member of the right-wing, why, they don't want you in the Democratic Party unless you're in the South. Then in the South, they're worried about the Democrats are worried about losing the South because they can't win an election without them. I'm going to tell you, the silly Republican Party can never win an election without the right wing. But you know what America needs? It needs tonight a great Christian party that will stand together on one mighty coalition made up of all the best that are in the parties of these United States, with a firm and fervent determination to clear communism out of America, to give back private enterprise and independence and freedom to the American people, and to fight communism to the death wherever they find that challenge. In the midst of this conflict, the greatest person the earth has ever known is going to walk back in it. The most powerful ruler of all rulers will step back in, King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And if stepping up this fight hastens that day, we ought to get on with it quick. Now when my enemy says he's going to get me lulled to sleep, he's going to take my silly presidents and his foolish advisors and make a deal with them, that they're going to surrender our armament, and just when we trust in his peace, his allies will attack us. And while we leave him immune from the blow, he plans on suddenly destroying us. That war is already on. You know, they are very angry, and they state that one of the RAND executives has already advised the United States that we should suddenly just destroy the Soviet Union without warning them, since this war is on, and they plan treachery. So they put this in the book. Well, it is a good idea. I point out tonight that you have a war on. You know the Korean War is still on. Oh, you say, no, we got a truce. Yes, you may have a truce, but you've never had, my friends, a final settlement of the Korean War. You've never had a final armistice. You've never had an end. You, every day you have crews going in and sitting down on one side of the table and the red Chinese on the other, and you're arguing all day long. On the hilltops, American observers are watching the buildup of Soviet equipment in North Korea, watching airfields being prepared, high-flying rockets high-flying rocket aircraft are photographing as much as they can get from high perimeters. And I tell you tonight that this is just another one of those areas that they can turn it on or off anytime they want to. If they want to hold your attention in that part of the world, they warm that up. If they want to keep your eye off of what they're doing, they start internal trouble. And while you have your eye on that, then you have Chinese trouble. And while you're tied down with Chinese trouble, they try to destroy you and gobble Europe. But just remember this tonight. The kingdoms of this world shall become the kingdoms of our Lord and his Christ. Pagans, atheists, enemies of Christian civilization, they do not have the possibility of victory. Irrespective of what they think they claim, they enjoy the fact that they are the majority by numbers in the earth.
But my family and your family reaches out into the far corners of heaven. The Most High God says, I'll gather my elect from the four corners of heaven. And when that day is climaxed, they're going to bow the knee, whether they like it or not. Yes, there is no peace with Russia. Every Christian should do all he can to stir up every other American to not accept any of these deals, to put pressure on his government to see that this thing does not take place. Every Christian should repudiate everything associated with Kennedy and his associates as long as they sell us out to the enemy in this fashion. We haven't time to go into the facets of duplicity with which they boast of their accomplishments in the church. That's a disparaging pattern for denominations. There is not an organized pattern of religion today that in major denominations belongs to the National Council of Churches or to the Rome itself that has not been taken in this world conspiracy to further communist causes. But again I say, lift up your heads, from whence comes your strength.